Off Tattooed Millionaires Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. I'm joined by my brother, Max. Before we say anything, I'm going to dedicate this pod to at Pretty Penguin, only because I said I would. We got a lot of new fans on Twitter this week, and for some reason, I told them I would do that. So now that I have gotten that out of the way, Max, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm having a cup of coffee, so delicious and so out of South America, it could be playing for Atlanta United right now.
Solid. What's the company?
It's a Gaslight Coffee Roasters here in Chicago.
Nice. A shout out to Tiny House Coffee in Austin, which I was drinking this morning. Delicious. All right. So huge news this week in U.S. soccer.
Huge everything this week in soccer. Before we get started, I mean, I can't imagine like a week that had more just banana stuff going on. It was almost a perfect week for us as soccer fans. Just wild MLS stuff, mm-hmm. U.S. women's team doing enough to win the She Believes Cup. Other big news with American internationals we'll get to. My English Premier League team won. Your English team lost. And that I thought was the only thing. That was the only blemish on an otherwise like perfect weekend. With obviously the CONCACAF Champions League MLS sweep as well. So
I've come to expect that, though.
Not that people care about, you know, your Portsmouth FC fandom, but
they ought to.
Did you feel the same way that was the only thing that went wrong this week, soccer-wise?
I have been just so personally busy because I've had guests at my house all week that it's nice to see it all lined up like that. And I'm also just a more negative person than you are, so maybe I wasn't thinking as positively as you are. But now that you lay it out, I like it. It was a beautiful week.
It really was.
Yes.
So let's get down to all the different things that happened.
Before we get into it, let's say, okay, there's no breaking news about an expansion announcement. There's no news on the Ohio lawsuit. There's no news on the San Antonio lawsuit. There's no news on the NASL lawsuit. Nor has there been any movement towards or away from Austin. But something far more disturbing and something that indeed makes us question the very nature of what it means to be a United States fan has happened, and that is Christian Pulisic has gotten a new tattoo. Max, what is his new tattoo?
It is the eyes of a tiger on his forearm.
Yep.
Only the eyes and the surrounding face part of that. So not the entire tiger head, but simply the eyes on his lower forearm so that he can lift it up across his own eyes and suddenly give himself tiger eyes, which he has done apparently in some sort of like night out with the Dortmund players photo, which you found posted and shared on our Twitter. So we've got, if you add up all of Pulisic's tattoos, he's got Screaming Eagle, which is, you know, A+ in its kitschiness and all that kind of stuff. Then doesn't he have like a Pulisic name tattoo or something like that on his forearm?
Yeah, I was trying to find what that actually said. I don't know.
I think that's what it is.
Okay.
And now he's got this, like, eyes of the tiger thing on his forearm, on, like, the underside of his other forearm. So, like, yes.
First question, how much time do we want to get or sort of devote analyzing this? And how disturbed are you? That's my second question.
Well, the thing that I'm curious about, too, is that, you know, we both have tattoos.
Yes.
And
we both have not excellent tattoos.
Yes, we are great at getting bad tattoos without thinking much about them.
Yeah.
But so you know, like this is the kind of tattoo where it's big enough that it takes a lot of time to get this tattoo, and it's a solid commitment amount of like hours sitting in a chair. It seems to have like decent shading and stuff like that. But also like when you get a tattoo, they tell you, you know, like, hey, you're not supposed to like do too much exercise because you'll just sweat out the ink. So it's kind of rare, I would say, to see like athletes get new tattoos during season. And or at least that would be my guess because it's kind of bad. You might lose some of the ink.
I think it should be a rare thing, but isn't that rare?
Yes.
Yes.
So this is a huge look change. I've never seen you don't really come across wild animal tattoos that frequently. And so this, I don't even know how to interpret this tattoo, except that it's bad. And
it looks like the Zlatan logo.
Yes, it does.
And if you're in dab position, that is when the eyes cover your own eyes.
That's what I was saying on Twitter. I really hope that he incorporates this into some sort of goal celebration where he's putting this over his eyes to give himself tiger eyes.
Yeah.
So I'm
you're so much happier about this than I am.
I'm like impressed with his dedication to bad tattoos. I mean, if we think about the pinnacle of American soccer as being like Landon Donovan / Clint Dempsey, and how Pulisic is already like there, this just fulfills that narrative. He's already a deuce. He's just one bad rap album away from, you know, leading the U.S. men's national team in goals scored.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I don't care. So long as on the field, he's still not a deuce.
No, I mean, it is so terrible. It's I'm charmed by it, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. That's where I'm coming down. It's bad, but I think it's so bad that I like it. It's like I can't remember if we actually talked about this on the pod or if we just were exchanging these messages about the who is it, the Premier League player who has a tattoo of Madonna on his hand?
Oh, I forget. I don't think he's in the Premier League anymore.
Yeah, it's like I think the team got knocked out of the championship. Yeah. I can't remember who it is, but
I think like we did talk about this and Onanism. Yes. Weird. Yeah.
It makes him look like a hard man.
Yes. This is the opposite of that.
Yeah, I don't know what it is exactly, but something about it is so off and bad that I'm kind of charmed by it.
Okay. Well, as our mom never told us, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. So I'm going to move on. And we're going to start this week the same way we do every week, with three on, three off. We choose three players or things that we would put on the field if we could, and three that we'd take off. And Max, you're three on this week. Yes. So who's your first pick? What is your first pick? What would you be putting on the field this week?
Let's just keep it rolling on the Dortmund train, and I'm putting on Christian Pulisic, who went full 90 this week for Dortmund and played really well. Previous weeks, we'd actually taken him off in this little segment we do because he had been taken off out of the starting lineup and hadn't been performing up to snuff. But this week was a good week for him. He started the Bundesliga game, didn't start the Euro game. But he played really well. He basically had one assist to Batshuayi for what was the go-ahead goal at the time. And then he had another would-be assist that Schürrle missed. And then another would-be assist that actually was an Eintracht own goal when the defender slid in to block it from coming to Marco Reus, I think it was, and hit it for the own goal. So he was really instrumental in setting up Dortmund's attack and played a really strong game. So nice work for Christian Pulisic. Good to see him back up to form. And I think a lot of us were kind of worried in a sense, you know, that he wasn't getting minutes and all that kind of stuff. But we saw that Peter Stöger was just kind of giving some rotation to his team. Batshuayi didn't start this game, so I had a spot open for Christian Pulisic. And with Dortmund having so many games in the league and in Europe, you know, he'll find minutes somewhere. And so he had a good week this week.
Yeah, he really did. And we you know, because we're an American soccer podcast, we also hit our quota of talking about Christian Pulisic for the first 10 minutes of our show.
Yeah.
So nice work. I'll move on and I'll do my first off. So I'm actually going to take off the entire city of Columbus because in this desperate fight for legitimacy, the MAPFRE Stadium should not have been as empty as it was for the home opener. Yes, the fans that were there seemed to be working twice as hard to make up for it, but they didn't buy two tickets, and that's really all the MLS cares about. In fact, MLS reports ticket sales and not attendance in order to inflate the numbers, so I want to believe in Columbus, but it makes it really difficult when I'm watching their home opener on TV and the stadium is fairly empty. So first thing I'm taking off is the entire city of Columbus. I'm sorry, I don't want to # save the crew, but hard to defend.
It's happening
it.
Too. Sorry to jump in, but no, okay. Obviously, you know, like they're, as you said, poor attendance, but at the same time, Columbus has been really good.
Yeah.
So you'd think, I mean, with everything surrounding it, maybe, you know, if you're a Columbus fan and have some perspective, you know, shoot us an email or send us a a tweet, because I would be curious about this, if the pre-court stuff has made it harder for fans to feel attached, if it feels like they're, you know, like fastening on to this just dying team in the city, or if there's something else going on that's driving down attendance. I'd be curious to know. But yeah, like I was saying, the Crew have played really well, and obviously they finished last season super strong, and looked like they were going to make a run to the championship, and didn't. But yeah, they've started this season super strong, making Jossy Zardes look like a superhero again somehow.
Incredible.
And it's yeah. No one to blame but themselves for not showing up for the games, though.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I want to have as big a heart as I possibly can for Columbus right now, but I'm not going to defend that. Max, who's your next on pick?
Well, the exact opposite of Columbus attendance problems, we'll go to Atlanta. And I am putting on Miguel Amarón. And watching the Atlanta game this week, just, man, I love Miggy. Like, it's weird. I am not like an Atlanta United fan. I know that, like, I'm caught up in all of the kind of enthusiasm of it, as everybody is who's just sort of a casual observer of American soccer. It's exciting to see how well Atlanta does, how well they draw people to their stadium. But then actually just watching Miguel Amarón play is so exciting. And he, like, quickly is becoming one of my favorite players. Every time I watch one of his games, I just like him more. And he was just kind of all over the field today, and like working hard on defense, connecting runs, just super aggressive. And then obviously he scored that huge goal, that rocket of a shot off his left foot that was just, you know, breathtaking and badass. So putting Miggy on.
Yes, absolutely. I think that goal. I said something like this on Twitter, but that was a true golazo. Like, when I watch Liga MX, everyone's like, oh, it's a golazo, it's a golazo. No, a golazo is what Miggy did. Out of the box, left foot, top left corner, just an absolute bullet, a beautiful game.
There's some great replays of it that are from inside the goal, you know? Mm-hmm. And you can just see, it just looks like the ball is headed right at the camera, and you just see how fast it moves. There's just no chance for anyone to react that quickly to where he puts it. And watching him play and work the entire field, he deserves goals like that, because he just contributes so much in so many different places to the team. And it's awesome. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sort of like don't have words for it, but no. Finished watching that game. But you know, it is so much fun to watch him play. He just has this kind of joy, and it's easy to see why the Atlanta fans love him.
For me, for the next person or thing I'm taking off the field, and maybe this is to balance out my first pick, is the entire city of Austin, which is where I live. But this week it was announced that Mikayla Place is the final sort of. Pre-court's preferred destination for a stadium. Mikayla Place used to be a literal dump. It is 9 miles north of downtown in a neighborhood completely devoid of soul. It's next to The Domain. So for those of you who don't live in Austin, I've never not been to The Domain. The Domain is a giant mall / planned community, and not the kind of place that you want to go to before a soccer game. It is completely soulless. I'm repeating that, but it's important to note. It's the worst thing about American malls. You don't want to go see a game there. Don't believe the hype. There is no convenient way to get there as of yet.
It sounds like if for someone who's never lived in Texas, they're like, oh yeah, Texas. Everything's bigger in Texas. Texas is great. And then you move down to Texas and you kind of like, yeah, I see that. But then you also see that Texas just specializes in giant malls and giant strip malls and driving in cars. So it seems like it is like a constellation of the worst parts of living in Texas in that sense. Out of the city, hard to get to, super commercialized, generic mall kind of thing.
Yeah, it should be said, like, you know, Giant Texas, the best of Giant Texas is HEB and Fiesta. The worst of Giant the worst of Giant Texas are things like The Domain. But I mean, when I've read some whatever editorials about it, they say, oh, you know, there's buses that go there. Nobody takes the bus in Austin. Traffic is abysmal. My wife works 5 miles away from where we live. It takes her an hour to get there. There's they're like, oh, you know, there's trains. There's one train per half an hour at most Austin stations. So they're going to have to add a lot more trains. But there's already a spending cap on the train system in Austin. So anything would have to go through the city and they'd have to approve it, which is unlikely because they're not even expanding it, the train system, to residential neighborhoods where people are commuting from. So I'm not buying this. I don't think it's as positive as people say it is. I also don't think that my fears of, I mean, Dallas and Houston, bottom five attendance in the MLS, giant cities, much bigger than Austin. What's different about Austin? Okay, we're young, we're hip, but I have not been convinced yet. And it sounds stupid to say, yes, I want to believe that the Crew can stay in Columbus, but I'm also very open. I live in Austin. The people we've talked to from MLS 2, ATX, awesome people. Love interacting with them on Twitter. But I'm just not convinced. So, City of Austin, City of Columbus, you're on the bench. Get out of my life.
What is the deal with Houston too? Because I mean, like, Houston Stadium is downtownish, and I used to live in Houston. It just seems that, like, I don't know. Maybe we're spoiled by seeing the success of Atlanta and that kind of thing. But it does seem like there's just some missing ingredient in some of these cities to really spur MLS interest.
And it would be different if FC Dallas weren't good or if Houston weren't good. But I think most fans of the MLS are fans of the project that's going on in Dallas. I think most people respect the Dynamo. It's baffling to see how empty, especially the Dynamo Stadium, is. I mean, and considering the number of people that play soccer in Houston and Dallas, both of them hubs for soccer, especially in the South, that they can't get more than 15,000 people to a game. I mean, I read
in Houston, as you know, like, I lived in Houston for a long time, and Houston's a true international city. It really is like an immigrant city. Mm-hmm. It has giant Chinatown, giant India town. It's a really international city, to keep repeating myself, but it feels like New York in that sense, or LA. And yeah, it seems weird that that MLS can't pick up there.
Yeah, let's move on from the Texas problem.
Yes, okay.
And on to more positive things. Who are you putting on the field?
Luis Robles.
Oh, absolutely!
Huge performance and goal. I mean, it looked like the Red Bulls defense was a bunch of 12-year-olds, and that somehow Robles was like just parrying off and defending the goal from all these shots that were coming his way. I forget the exact number of saves he had, but it was, you know, like over 15 shots on goal that he had to defend. And huge performance from him. I don't think there weren't too many of the saves that were like breathtaking kind of saves. But the thing is, like, when you're constantly under a barrage like that, it's just so stressful and so takes so much concentration. And he just stuck the landing completely. Huge performance from him, keeping the Red Bulls going in CONCACAF Champions League and putting them in a great position for the second round, or the second round of the tie.
Yes. I won't get into that game too much because I want to talk about it later, but what a performance. From one goalkeeper to another, I am taking off from my final slot, not a city, but Ethan Horvath. He hasn't played a competitive match for Club Bruges since October. He's only 22, but he needs a restart. It doesn't seem like he's going to get the opportunity to earn his place back in Bruges. So I said, get while the going's good. I don't know why I can't think of that. Maybe MLS, who knows, maybe a second-tier team somewhere else. He has a long career ahead of him, but he is totally floundering in Bruges right now.
That's tough. And, you know, goalkeepers, I think, have it especially difficult where once you've lost the confidence and once the other goalkeeper just isn't making mistakes, how do you fight your way into the lineup?
Yeah, patience. I don't know.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing where basically you have to have an injury or you have to have the other guy just fall apart completely.
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel for him, and he's someone I picked up a lot on Football Manager. And, like all those players, you develop some sort of weird fake bond with them. So the starting goalie for the Milwaukee Barons is in trouble right now in Belgium. So I want him to do better. Who's your last pick for – who are you putting on?
That was my third one. So Luis Robles.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. All right.
No, it's okay. We can count to three. It's cool. I mean, I'll just take this as extra time to talk about Red Bulls, and we can transition to talking about CONCACAF Champions
League. Yeah, dude.
League
let's do it.
That's the big story. So
Luis
let's jump
Robles,
into that.
He won that game. It was not only. I mean, he did that for the Red Bulls. I'm not going to take anything away from the team. But really, Luis Robles.
It was 2 versus 11. It was Bradley Wright Phillips and Luis Robles versus Club Tijuana.
Yeah.
It was a really crazy game. Stressful. Yeah, I'm gonna pull up if you actually look at the stats from that, it's just mind blowing. And I saw a lot of people tweet something to this effect, but it was basically like the Red Bulls out CONCACAF'd a Mexican team in Mexico.
Yes, that's what I loved about it.
Like the Red Bulls led, and they, you know, we had like a fraction of the possession, fraction of the shots, but led in fouls and yellow cards, and somehow won 2-0.
I'm cool with that. We need, yeah. I mean, we need to be like that. We need to be that scrappy. I am all about watching low grade CONCACAF violence, and that game was filled with it. To go to Tijuana and out CONCACAF, a Liga MX team. Oh, it felt so good. And I was stressed the whole game. I like the Red Bulls. I'm not like a fan of the Red Bulls, but I was sweating and I was really pulling for them.
I've got the stats here. Okay. Yeah. Guess how many shots Club Tijuana had?
21.
30.
What?
Yeah. How many corners did Tijuana have?
12.
13.
Okay.
So how many, let's see here. How many fouls total in the game?
35.
Pretty close. 31.
Ah, so, I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, pretty much right on there. Yeah. So yeah, and it was like 61% for Tijuana versus 39 for Red Bulls. Red Bulls got that early goal in the 9th minute and obviously sat back too, which may have affected those possession stats and that kind of thing. But watching the game, Red Bulls didn't look like they were going to take charge of the game. Really had the oomph in midfield to hold on to possession and to do anything. And so they were just springing counterattacks occasionally. But even then, it was mostly they were just bunkering down and hoping to weather the storm, which they did.
I mean, it's all said and done now. And so I feel great about it. Watching it, I just was like, why aren't you holding on to the ball? Why are you just launching these two-person counterattacks all the time? And eventually it paid off with that second away goal, which is invaluable. But, well, it's not invaluable. You know, there is a value on it. They can always score, you know, 3 away goals. But I wanted them to hold on to the ball more often. It seemed like they were just giving it right back up to Tijuana. But it's all said and done. What a great game for the Red Bulls. I'm sweating right now just thinking about the second leg, but it's going to be great.
And going into this round of CONCACAF Champions League, if you were to say, okay, which of these three games with an MLS team in it does the MLS team have the best chance? You would have said, well, it's probably Red Bulls, or, you know, because Tijuana is not that great. Or maybe you would have said it's Seattle. But what it ended up happening was the Red Bulls game was probably the game where the MLS team looked the worst. And the other two games, granted, they were home ties for the MLS team, but those teams, MLS teams looked better, and the stats back that up a bit. So let's move on to the other CONCACAF Champions League games. What was your take on the Sounders game?
It felt like a friendly for the majority of the game. I mean, Chivas are kind of in a slump right now. They just hired a new athletic director, or I forget what his title actually is, but they're kind of trying to address the problems at hand. You know, Alan Pulido came out and said that he wasn't in favor of a lot of the signings that Chivas have made over the summer, that he would have preferred players with a little bit more experience, that he liked the youth movement, but he didn't think it put them in the best position to compete. So clearly an organization with a lot of infighting right now, which really helps Seattle, because a strong Chivas is a difficult Chivas. But I was pretty bored, actually, by most of this game. The goal by Deuce off a beautiful cross from Wingo, lovely. I don't know. Chivas just kept bombing that right side of the pitch over and over and over and over again. Didn't switch up play. But, I don't know, there's constant space on the left-hand side, but no matter what, Chivas were just, that was their game plan, and they never changed it up. And I don't know why not. I don't know what Matias Almeida was saying. What was your impression?
Yeah, I think I backed it up too. I mean, a pretty evenly matched game in a lot of ways, possession, shots, that kind of stuff. And it just kind of took, it needed one little edge. And this time around, Seattle had that. Going into, going back to Guadalajara now, what is your thought? Does Chivas have the advantage here?
If you were
to bet money on this second game, what are you thinking?
Extra time. I think Chivas won yesterday 1-0. Yes. So and it's a win that'll give them a lot of confidence. I think they're going to be a little bit tired, but it seems like they're starting to right the ship, and certainly within the organization, they're trying to make things more structured. If that makes sense, hiring with the new athletic director or the director of player development. I forget what the hell's title is. I should have looked it up, but I failed.
It's okay, bro.
Yeah. Seattle rested a lot of players.
Yes.
This week in the MLS. So, but they're going to Guadalajara. It's a fortress. You know what? Why not? I'm going to say Seattle extra time just for the drama.
Crazy. I think that I would love to believe you, and I really hope that's what happens. But I also think that, I mean, going to Guadalajara, mm-hmm. you have to think that Chivas has now tasted blood a little bit. Mm. That's not the right metaphor.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Let me try another metaphor. How about they've been punched in the mouth?
Yes.
And as rabid as the fan base is, as huge a team as they are, as much as they mean to Liga MX, you got to think that those players are just going to be so amped for the second leg of the quarterfinal. And it's a must-watch game. It's huge. But I would put my money on Chivas still.
This is a difficult game for me personally because
it is.
We are Chivas fans. We love Chivas, but we want the MLS to do well. And there's no end of that sentence. It's just going to remain in conflict. I don't really know how I feel about one team winning over the other. I think this is definitely the season to be playing Chivas in the CCL if you are an MLS team. But I'll probably leave it at that. I do think Guadalajara is a fortress, but
let's move on to Toronto and Tigres.
Yes, fascinating. This one I did not foresee.
You didn't foresee Toronto
beating Tigres. I think even though it's champion versus champion.
It's interesting. I mean, like as we said last week, it's not just champion versus champion. It's the best MLS team in history, pretty much.
Yeah.
Versus like a champion or good Liga MX team in Tigres. And so you're thinking, well, if this is a time when the MLS champion is going to perform better than it usually does, it makes sense it's going to be Toronto, who has historically way above average for, if that makes sense, for an MLS champion, or historically one of the biggest, best MLS champions we're going to have. So the, but yeah, I, you know, was nervous going into the games, thinking, you know, like that, feeling that this game was sort of like a litmus test in a sense of how strong the MLS is. And we talked about that. Like, this is really a way to measure like how far MLS is coming along. And the game didn't disappoint in that sense. 2-1 Toronto. Toronto was for the most part the better team, and that was somewhat surprising.
Yeah, I mean, it was a technical battle in the midfield. Should be said that Gignac was benched by Tigres for just resting him, and then he played the full 90 in his game yesterday or today, I forget. So I don't think Tigres are prioritizing the CONCACAF Champions League, which is an important thing to note because Gignac is one of the best players in Liga MX. But what impressed me most about Toronto in this game is, you know, MLS teams do not come back. They don't beat Liga MX teams. They do not show this kind of grit, similarly to the New York Red Bulls game. And when Osorio's goal went in the 89th minute, I felt a sense of oblivion. It wasn't happiness or joy. It was just like total belief.
Yeah. We said, not to keep referencing last week's pod, but when we were talking about this as like I said, a litmus test, one of the things we said was, you know, like, Greg Vanney, is he going to go to Mexico and get a result? And you have to think in some ways that that's on the table here. Like, are these coaches, these players thinking about going into Mexico in the case of Toronto, in the case of Seattle for their second leg? And what does that mean for the reputation of MLS? What does that mean for the coaches?
Yeah.
If Greg Vanney has these rumors being tied to, or maybe they're just hopeful rumors from us as fans thinking about him as a potential candidate for the U.S. men's national team, like, CONCACAF Champions League becomes a proving ground for people in that position.
Yes.
And no surprise also that we see Jozy Altidore and Clint Dempsey stepping up, guys who've been in that situation a lot in CONCACAF.
I mean, if a coach from the MLS wins CONCACAF Champions League and, say, makes it to even the quarterfinals or semifinals of the playoffs, he's got to be one of the top three candidates for the U.S. men's national team job, right?
I think the way that U.S. Soccer Federation thinks, yes. I don't necessarily...
We should separate
the issue there a little bit, because I don't think either of us would say that that's like the right way to make a decision. But I think that for a lot of these people, decision makers in USSF, and also for the people involved in MLS, for the coaches themselves and for the teams, that those sorts of things really do matter. And so it is really important to people's resumes. It's really important to the narratives we build around the growth of MLS, and whether or not that really matters in terms of how successful that person would be as the coach for the men's team is another question. But I do think it really does influence how likely someone is to be considered for that job.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's move on from the CONCACAF Champions League to just the regular old MLS, not all regular old.
Actually, before we move on, can I make one more point, which is that the more better we do at CONCACAF Champions League, the more experience American players get playing in CONCACAF stadiums in harsh environments. And it really normalizes all those games that we sort of bitch and moan about, those World Cup qualifier games, those other international games that the U.S. men's national team has. So the more experience people have playing in places like Monterrey or Guadalajara, it's just going to be good too. And we should think about that in the same way we think about playing young players. The more our teams get international experience, it's going to be great for them down the road.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
All right, so let's go back to regular MLS.
Second game of the season. What was your game of the week? What's a game that you want to highlight?
So I want to talk about Atlanta.
All right.
And DC United. A lot going into this game. A lot of storylines. Assad comes back to Atlanta, the home opener for Atlanta. There's the undercurrent of the youth players involved, Chris Durkin and Andrew Carlton on the benches. And so there's just a whole bunch to watch and to think about in this game. And we both watched this game. And coming into it too, obviously Atlanta had a really poor performance against Houston last week. And so there was a lot of, you know, not quite furor and unrest in Atlanta, but also some questions about, hey, what the heck's going on here? And Atlanta showed up big, and DC United not so much.
Yeah. People get impatient pretty quickly in sports. It's only the second week of the season, but that's when the narrative starts to build. And I think that if Atlanta would have lost or even tied this game, I think people would have gotten disproportionately unsettled.
Yeah, and you know, Atlanta, basically, this was a kind of classic Atlanta experience in the sense that, like, hey, everyone's now talking about Andrew Carlton. Everyone's now talking about 72,000 fans in the stadium. Everyone's talking about Miguel Amarone, as I was. Everyone's talking about the things that make Atlanta Atlanta. And so it was just a return to form, but a fun game to watch. One of the things that frustrated me was DC United in general. But like watching DC United, they were so toothless with the attack. And you know, Paul Arriola, that's a storyline in this MLS season, coming from Cholos, moving back to MLS. What's his career development like? If he really is a player that's going to be a mainstay for American soccer, what does that look like now that he's playing for DC United? And I know it's early in the season, still getting used to new systems, new teams, that kind of stuff. But DC United's attack was pretty tepid, and Arriola was pretty calm, pretty ineffective. I saw a lot of what he was doing, like kind of taking the ball forward, but then running into Atlanta's defense and just kind of recycling back. It didn't really look like the Paul Arriola that we like to see, who is using his speed to bomb up and down the field. And I don't know if that's just because DC United is just not good enough and doesn't have enough sort of supporting players that create that space and allow him to create width, and that he can get, you know, good service and that kind of thing. But a poor performance from him so far, and it just had me thinking to myself that this is something I'm going to watch as the season goes on. I don't want to see him stall in his development because he's on a poor team that doesn't get a chance to really use him as a weapon. Instead, you know, uses him as a sort of like a cure-all for their offense when they're struggling. So we will see. But still early in the season, obviously he's teaming up with Assad now, and so maybe there will be a lot more good things on the horizon for DC United's offense.
Yeah, I think you summarized that beautifully. I think I was a little bit more bored by the game than you were. There are, you know, 50 minutes between goals, and I just maybe it was boredom, maybe it was frustration with DC United. I just want them to be better, especially with Paul Arriola, someone I love. Another one of my football manager pickups, but you know, the game broke the single game attendance mark in MLS, just over 72,000, like you said. Carlton subbed on for a minute, which is sort of insulting. I saw on Twitter someone made the point that Zidane had to apologize for subbing on a player for 1 minute. So would like to see him getting a few more reps in, let's say.
Yeah, after not getting playing time last week when Atlanta was down 4 goals or whatever, and then today only getting a minute and a half of playing time when Atlanta was up 3-1, was like, yeah, if not now, when is he going to play?
Yeah, exactly. In either extreme, he should be getting a shot, and he's not, which is something I think people should hold Tata Martino accountable for. We can all be fans of Tata Martino. We can all like his style. We can all appreciate everything he's doing for the league. But, you know, we can also say, we can also question, hey, why aren't you playing this kid?
Like, yeah, and it's also, it was a crazy game because, you know, Ben Olsen did the same thing for DC United. We were like, oh, okay, DC United, you're down 2 goals. Time to make a change. Nope. All of the subs are coming on like after the 85th minute or something like that. It just seemed both managers were waiting to make any subs until really late in the game. And it's just like, what? Why is, you know,
maybe why just not getting a feel for their teams.
Yeah. Anyway, so kind of unfortunate to see, but at the same time, maybe you say, hey, maybe Tata Martino says, like, hey, I just won a game 3-1. Are you going to tell me I did something wrong? Because I'm pulling the right strings here. And I understand that. But like you, I'd like to see Carlton get some more minutes and make sure that he's actually, you know, learning and developing and getting opportunities on the field.
Yeah. It was a great ending to the game, but yeah, come on, Tata. The game that I want to talk about was my pick for game of the week last week. It's LAFC versus Real Salt Lake. It's hard to build a narrative off one game, of 1-0 win against Seattle, against anybody, you know, maybe not convincing. Real Salt Lake, good team, full strength, home opener. LAFC scores 5 against them. That's a much more of a statement game than 1-0 at Seattle against a diminished squad.
Last week, you were really impressed with the work of Vela, mm-hmm. and you mentioned his goal this week, but how did you feel? Were you similarly impressed this week? Do you feel like he's going to continue to be a monster?
Yes, I was impressed. I think that Orena and Rossi impressed me more. I think Carlos Vela has so much free range, but just the way those guys are linking up is so beautiful. They really understand each other's runs already. I'm not gonna be like MVP yet, just yet. I'll do that next week.
Okay.
Yeah. But
exciting stuff.
Yeah, really fun game to watch. I'm really enjoying the birth of LAFC.
It does feel like every time LAFC wins, it's basically like Bob Bradley spiking the football. Just being like, I'm still the man.
Or yeah.
I'm still a huge, figure in American soccer.
Yes, I love seeing him on the sideline. Just pissed. Just... yeah, just like looks like a man who would like speak in riddles. I don't know. Love
this
it.
This makes me think about what teams are likable in MLS. Do you have a feeling of like if I were to ask you like who is the most likable team or who are the three most likable teams in MLS?
I know if I all right, I'm going to exclude LAFC because they haven't been around long enough.
Yeah, the shine hasn't worn off them yet, so mm-hmm. It's hard to really judge them accurately.
And I think, you know, there's likable teams at different moments. I would say the most likable team in the MLS right now is Atlanta. And then I would say probably the Columbus Crew because of what's going on with the Save the Crew movement. But I don't think that I would have said the same thing before the Save the Crew movement. I think for most people they're an afterthought. I think because the MLS is becoming more and more popular and there's more and more journalism about it and we see like true fans of soccer following it, I would say FC Dallas are definitely top three because of the Play the Kids, because of everything that they do. Although, you know, kind of underperforming. I mean, you have to say Seattle or Portland, right? But I don't want to say both of them. I don't want to give the Pacific Northwest the final two spots in the top three. So,
yeah, it still feels like those teams to me are kind of like the Dallas Cowboys in a sense where it's like they've had success. They're really popular. Mm-hmm. It's hard to me as like a hipster feels like it's a little bit hard to support them, even though I think you're right. I mean, like they're players and there's teams that I like and I like teams that are well supported by their fans. I think that's, you know, like it reflects well on the ownership and the organization because MLS and soccer can be a difficult sell. And so communities where that have made that work, I'm, you know, like impressed with and want to support. But the teams that, so I guess we're listing a lot of teams.
Yeah.
The only teams I would add to that, I think Minnesota and Orlando are both pretty interesting.
Yes.
You know, like there's something, I think maybe it's because for Minnesota of that, you know, they struggled last season, but the snow game and there's some parts of their team that I think are really interesting stories. Christian Ramirez and if they're turning it around this season, Adrian Heath is kind of an outsider and a good coach. Makes them sort of interesting and likable. You feel like they're sort of an underdog. So they're good. Orlando City, kind of similar to Atlanta in the sense that they have like a stadium, good support.
Yes.
I mean, obnoxious colors.
I loved watching the Orlando Minnesota game. I loved it because of the atmosphere. I mean, there was no Sasha Kljestan, there was no Dom Dwyer, there was no Victor Hero, there was no Christian Ramirez, there was no Abu Dinladi. So the game actually felt like a B team match. But that mm-hmm. atmosphere that they create in Orlando is incredible. I mean, Minnesota wins. Ethan Finlay, 2 goals. But I don't know. I would love to go to a game in Orlando.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on.
Yeah.
You got, I mean, there's so many games and there's a ton of crazy stuff that happened this weekend.
I know. I mean, we've already spent a lot of time on the New York Red Bulls, but the New York Red Bulls versus Portland also felt like a statement game because, I mean, it was another one of those squads from the New York Red Bulls where they're resting for the Champions League. This is not a full strength. You know, they had a 17-year-old Ben Means scoring his first goal in the 18th minute. Beautiful setup by Kaku. It was a 21-year-old Virginian passing to Derek Etienne, a 23-year-old Argentinian. Derek Etienne, 21-year-old Virginian, to a 23-year-old Argentinian Kaku, to a 17-year-old kid from Connecticut. That is the best of the MLS, right? Like, young American talent, young South American talent, all link-up play. Beautiful. Bradley Wright Phillips comes off the bench, scores a header in the 75th minute. Carlos Rivas scores 2 minutes later, adds to his tally in injury time, 2 assists from Vincent Bezancourt. I wouldn't know what to make of Giovanni Savarese if I were a Timbers fan, but if I'm a Red Bulls fan, I am getting so excited.
I agree. I think the Red Bulls were the next team I would say in terms of likability. Even though I generally think that New York teams are not likable.
If they weren't named the Red Bulls and if their stadium weren't so far away.
Yeah. But, yeah, exciting stuff. I mean, another thing, if you just think about a thing that made this weekend crazy from an American soccer perspective, you've got young players with the Red Bulls, young players with Atlanta and Andrew Carlton, DC United with Chris Durkin, all these guys. Granted, those latter two guys didn't make any impression on the game really, but the goal here in the Red Bulls game, just it adds to what we were all hoping for was going to happen in MLS this season, is a play the kids kind of season with these big teams, with these teams giving minutes to these young players.
Yeah, it was a great game. The other great game this week, and I felt crazy because I had no, it surprised me, 7 goals between Chicago Fire and Sporting KC. There's too many goals to go through. A total slugfest. 5 goals in the last 20 minutes. Chicago comes back from 2 down, goes ahead, and then ends up losing 4-3. Incredible.
Bananas.
Totally bananas. Nobody at that game. Nobody at that game at all. But holy crap, what a game.
Yeah, looking at everything that happened this weekend, I don't even know if what game was the craziest or most awesome, but I think this one might be it. Because you just look at all the results and you're just like, holy God. You know, penalty saved in New England, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, the Sporting KC comeback at the end was awesome.
Yeah, there were a lot of late comebacks. I mean, Crew and Impact, Jazzy Zardes.
I feel like this podcast could just be us listing out names of players and just be like, yeah, Jazzy Zardes, that was awesome. Yeah, like that was like, that is like how this week just played out. It was just kinds of tons of awesome moments.
Jazzy Zardes, awesome.
Who would have thought that would be the we would be saying that at any point.
No, I hate myself for it. Chris Tierney, awesome. Another last minute winner. What a high drama league. It's nice to see the MLS just putting out entertaining games too.
Yeah, I think it's nice, and I think you know, like if that's the nature of the league, then hey, so be it. You know, if that's the kind of players that we entertain, that we can get on the league, and that's how it shakes out. If MLS just becomes this like naturally really fast paced game with tons of goals, like that's cool with me.
Yeah, that's what everybody is hoping for. Yeah, I mean, great weekend. Kai Kamara hit his 100th MLS goal in his career for Vancouver.
What this else is bizarre? Like, what? I'm looking at this, and like if we were to literally just add up the total number of goals this weekend, it would be absurd. Like, I'm sorry, I'm going to like, can you play the hold music for Soft Tattooed Millionaires?
Yes, it's just the sound of a tattoo gun.
Sorry for that hold music, but I just wanted to do some super simple, dumb math and see how many goals per game happened this weekend. And it's like 4 goals per game.
What is the total goals? 38?
So far, I think it's 38 goals in 9 games.
Wow. Does that include the NYCFC and LA Galaxy game right now?
Yeah, which is in the 66th minute as we record. So
38 goals.
Since I'm counting this on the fly in the back of an envelope, I may have had the slightly wrong numbers, but regardless, it's still like 4 goals a game, plus or minus some counting errors on my part, which just tells you how absolutely crazy this weekend has been.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
The highest scoring weekend in the Premier League was 43 goals, and that was 11 fixtures. So, you want goals? Come to America. I think on that note, let's move on to some final thoughts. I want to encourage people to read Stephen A. Banks' article, "Will U.S. Soccer Be Forced to Adopt Promotion Relegation?" If you don't already follow Stephen Banks on Twitter, do so. He's a professor of law at UCLA, explains all the crazy lawsuits going on against the MLS and the USSF in ways that I can understand. So read it. I found it fascinating. Twitter and Univision have announced 24 games in English will be broadcast live on Twitter. Max, you have some final thoughts this week?
Yeah, a couple ones. First of all, I think the week is always better the less we talk about lawsuits and the more there's actually soccer stuff going on.
Yes.
And it's weird that that is the case, but I think that's a very American soccer sentiment that so often we can get lost in some of these like business of sport details of leagues and suing each other and other kinds of things that once that kind of – when we have weeks where that's not the news and the news is just that we're scoring 4 goals a game – that's
yes.
awesome.
Yes.
So that's one final thought. My second final thought, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but the SHE Believes Cup wrapped up this week too, with the American women coming out on top, as you all undoubtedly know. And still a frustrating game. The U.S. women beat England 1-0 on an own goal from an England defender that was a legitimate own goal. And that was coming on the heels of a 1-1 draw. The women still continued to struggle with building an offense from the midfield and continued to rely on Megan Rapinoe and Mallory Pugh to do this sort of just out-athleticizing the other team, running down the field stuff, which is frustrating to watch given how talented we are. So an okay the ideal result in a sense, but not the ideal process.
Yes.
And continuing to frustrate me as a fan.
The least satisfying way to get the best result.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. We got goals in America. Come to America.
Yeah. Let's not end on that negative thing. If you want goals, come to America.
Yes. All right.
They grow on trees here. We import some from South America, but we make it happen.
Send some to Germany. If you want to get in contact with us, softtattooedmillionaires@gmail.com or @softtattoofc.